at some point. We may not. It remains to be seen.
The House goes on their August recess and will not be in session until September. North Korea has fired two short-range missiles into the Sea of Japan, the first such test since the meeting last month between President Trump and North Korean leader Kim Jong-un. Gordon Chang is a columnist with the Daily Beast, and he tells Fox News,
"These tests, although they're short-range, John, they are violations of U.N. Security Council resolutions, as were the missiles that were fired off in May by North Korea. And clearly, North Korea thinks it can escalate without cost. And until we start enforcing those resolutions, North Korea will be right."
This is USA Radio News.
Now you can fly anywhere in the world and pay discount prices on your airline tickets. Book a flight today to London, Paris, Madrid, or anywhere else you want to go. And pay a lot less, guaranteed. Call the International Travel Department right now at Low Cost Airlines.
800-215-5141. 800-215-5141. That's 800-215-5141.
Rift? What rift? That's according to Speaker of the House Nancy Pelosi, downplaying a meeting she had with New York Democratic Congresswoman Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez.
So in our caucus, we have our differences. Respect that instead of making a big issue of it. Respect that. Those are our differences, and how we express ourselves as representatives of our districts is our responsibility.
Europe's dealing with problems, including travel disruptions, from one of its worst heat waves ever. USA Radio Network's Chris Barnes explains.
The travel problems began on Thursday, especially disrupting rail and air travel in Britain, lasting into Friday. Technical problems at the air traffic control center there grounded many flights at the nation's two main airports. Britain, along with much of Western Europe, enduring one of its hottest days ever on Thursday, with a reading of 102 Fahrenheit recorded at Cambridge University's Botanic Garden in eastern England. Paris recorded its hottest day ever at nearly 109. Europeans and tourists were jumping into fountains, lakes, rivers, or the sea to escape the heat wave rising up from the Sahara. Britain, France, Belgium, Germany, and the Netherlands are all places where air conditioning is not typically installed in homes or stores or restaurants.
And for more news, please remember you can always find us by downloading the iHeartRadio app and searching for USA Radio News, or check us out on Facebook at USA Radio. For USA Radio News, I'm Tim Berg.
Hello, this is Nicole Smith, host of Happy to Help. Would you like to discover the secret to happiness? I talk to volunteers, executive directors, fundraisers, and authors about how nonprofit engagement enriches their lives. We thrive when we have a sense of purpose in our lives. Philanthropy is the new community. Tune in to Happy to Help every Wednesday at 10 a.m. to discover how to find your purpose and live well by doing good.
Are you looking to get your message in front of a qualified audience through all the noise out there today? Consider taking an advertisement out on Hunterdon Chamber Radio, WHCR, DB, the voice of business. Contact the Chamber today at 908-782-7115 or give us an email at info@hunterdon-chamber.org.
Well, good afternoon. It's Friday. Beautiful day. I guess I'll tell you about the weather, but I'm not sure I'd really have to. This looks like a really good weekend, so I hope everybody can enjoy it. Today is supposed to be about 88 degrees. Actually, it feels quite a bit warmer out there, especially if you're in the sun. Tonight, mostly clear. Low of only about 64 degrees, but that's certainly better than in the 70s or 80s. By tomorrow, sunny, high expected about 87 degrees, mostly clear tomorrow night, again, low of about 66 degrees. Sunday, and I never can say Sunday sunny, but Sunday sunny, high of about 89 degrees. Into Monday, sunny, then there's a slight chance of thunderstorms, high of about 92 degrees, so there's going to be some humidity. By Tuesday, again, mostly sunny. It's always hard to predict anything even out that far. But that's what they're saying. Tuesday night, partly cloudy. But this weather should be beautiful. Great day to get out there. Great day to do something. And if you don't have anything to do, either tonight or tomorrow, tomorrow night certainly, there is a antique and dinner. Actually, it's a lunch today and dinner tonight. Lunch tomorrow. I think there's lunch tomorrow. You'd have to check. And dinner tomorrow night in Pottersville. And it's really fun. They for lunch, they had sandwiches. Tonight, they have roast beef dinner, buffet style. And tomorrow night, the dinner is turkey, buffet style turkey, stuffing, you know, gravy, mashed potatoes. And it's outside underneath if we needed it, but it doesn't look like we will. And top it off. Be sure to top it off. With ice cream and peaches. Today for lunch, I went with some friends, and today for lunch, my dessert was peach ice cream with sliced peaches, and it was really terrific. So that's the weather. I'm going to play a couple spots. I'm Pat Smits, and the program It's the Law. Let me play a couple spots, and I'll get back and tell you what's happening in some of the legal news.
I'm Andy Ross. I'm chairman of the Ambassadors Committee of the Chamber. As members of the Ambassadors Committee, we contact new and renewing members of the Chamber to get their feedback on their Chamber experience and make them feel more at home with the Chamber.
Hunter Chamber of Commerce, building business, one business at a time.
You're listening to WHCR-DB, HuntertonChamberRadio.com. Brought to you by the Hunterdon County Chamber of Commerce, the voice of business.
Did you know that 1 in 5 people are affected by mental illness? NAMI Hunterdon is the locally affiliate for NAMI, the National Alliance on Mental Illness. We are all volunteers, and all our programs are free of charge. We offer Family to Family, a 12-week course for families that have an adult member with a mental illness. Another popular program is In Our Own Voice, where individuals who are living with mental illness discuss their challenges and their progress in overcoming those challenges. Another course we offer is Basics, a 6-week course for families with a child or an adolescent who has experienced mental illness. We also have a monthly support group for families on the third Thursday of every month. Please call NAMI Hunterdon at 908-284-0500 for more information about any of our programs or to join. NAMI Hunterdon, the voice for mental health in Hunterdon County.
When it matters most, our award-winning team of emergency physicians and nurses provides sophisticated care 24 hours a day. Superior emergency care at a moment's notice. Hunterdon Healthcare, your full circle of care.
Well, hello again. I'm Pat Smits, and I guess you've heard the weather, and you've heard beautiful weather for the weekend. I'm an attorney here in Hunterdon County, and I talk about legal news. The other thing that, I wanted to mention, because it's very interesting. Interesting to those of us who are lawyers, maybe. But there are lots of misconceptions out there about the law, and one of the things that is very interesting to me, at least, is that sometimes, I have to go back to very early cases because sometimes what I find is attorneys will actually cite something. In other words, what we can do in New Jersey if there's a published case, and I've often talked to my audience about what the difference is between an unpublished case and a published case. Basically, only published case can only those cases that have been published, approved for publication, can be cited to a court. But what often happens is the attorneys, or I find sometimes what happens is the attorneys really don't read the case. They'll just see a quote from a case in another case, and they think, oh, good, I'll just use that quote. And in fact, it is truly not applicable. Interestingly, that it is important for any client to understand what the attorney is relying upon when he or she talks to you about cases. And it was interesting just because of a case I was working on, I happened to have to read a case that went back to 1927. And, of course, that was a court of chancery in New Jersey. 1927 was before the new Constitution in New Jersey. And it's very interesting to see how these cases were written and who the firms, the attorneys were representing and what their position was. And then to take a look at, you know, how someone used that case for a citation in another case, in a current case, and whether or not it made any sense when you looked at the entire case and what the court in that case was looking at. But in any event, in connection with a couple matters this week, I started with that case, 1927, and then for other matters, I was going back to me, 1981 doesn't seem that long ago because I was practicing. I remembered the case when it was decided, but of course it really was a long time ago. And one of the cases that I was looking at from 1981 basically was totally changed because of a statute. And so no longer would the Palamony case from 1979, 1981, you'd have to know what's happened with the statute and what's happening since then to make any sense. So just quoting from those cases could be completely wrong. The another case that came out this week was surprising, actually. It was a domestic violence case that was the beginning of the case that went all the way up to the Supreme Court, which is very unusual for that to happen. A couple interesting cases with respect to litigation regarding foreclosure action. I found it rather interesting, but it was not, the case I'm talking about was not approved for publication. And the case dealt with, however, a foreclosure action, and one of the executors and heirs to his late mother's estate, he was the one who, in fact, brought this case. He was an executor of the estate and brought the case against or with another brother. Now, I think I'm getting that. The brother was one of the executors and heirs, and he was sued by another brother or son of the mother, brother. The two brothers were in litigation, which is not unusual. And what happened is another son was an obligor under a note that the mother was a mortgagor under a mortgage, and it was given to secure loans made under the home equity line of credit, HELOC. And this was extended by the plaintiff's bank, and of course what happened is the defendant appealed from a chancery division order granting the plaintiff summary judgment, rejecting the defendant's challenge to the amount due to the plaintiff. And so obviously what happened is this was extensive litigation. Then at this point, it was appealed. There was an appeal. And so that they viewed the appellate division had to view the material facts in light most favorable to the defendants, and that's generally undisputed. And so what happens in that case is the appellate division summarized the facts, and in its complaint, the plaintiff bank identified the defendant as an heir and executor of the estate. And so he filed a contesting answer and asserted that his answer was that the New Jersey Home Ownership Security Act barred the plaintiff from proceeding because the plaintiff charged late fees more than 5% of the principal and interest. So this was the basis of this litigation. Then there was, of course, discovery, motion for summary judgment. The defendant did not oppose it, and therefore it was granted. And so goes on and on from there. And basically, I do handle some guardianship, but basically what happens and what I find happening so often is someone does not get legal advice as soon as there's an issue. And very often we can, in fact, resolve matters before there's litigation if, in fact, people do seek competent legal advice and do what they need to do to try to conclude it. Because certainly, in my experience, most banks don't want or shouldn't want litigation, nor should executors in estate matters want litigation. And frankly, nor should people in family cases want litigation. But I can't tell you how many times I've heard, well, just take me to court. Just heard that the other night when the only issue is child support. And we have child support guidelines in New Jersey. Frankly, there are reasons, I think, in this case that the father would not want me to take it to court on behalf of the mother. But instead of coming up with a reasonable solution based on the child support guidelines, he's just going to be obstinate, and then we'll have to go to court. So in any event, this case to me was interesting because of the issues and the fact that the other thing, although in this case it was an executor, it was not someone who was on the mortgage or on the note, but it brings up an issue I was talking about today earlier, and that is the problems that people can encounter if they decide to purchase property together. In other words, I'm not really talking about people who are married and purchase a marital home, but people who decide they are not married. They may or may not be planning on getting married, but they decide to buy a home. And what happens? The real estate attorney, of course, is representing both of them and cannot represent either one of them if they want to go beyond the terms, the ordinary terms in a deed. Now, of course, a deed can be taken in less than 50-50 ownership, but the real problem that I've encountered and don't understand why people going into these situations don't contact a family lawyer is the problem when the relationship doesn't work out, what happens with the house, both people are on the mortgage, and guess what? It's a real shock to the person who moves out to realize that he or she still needs to be either paying the monthly mortgage payments and the real estate taxes or making sure the other person is doing so. So if before they bought that house, one of them would have come to me because, in fact, they both need separate attorneys because they have different interests. But assuming that one of them came to see me, I would indicate and advise him, strongly advise him, to have an agreement, what we would usually call as a cohabitation agreement. And believe it or not, it doesn't have to be a sexual relationship. There are times where older people decide that they're going to, buy a house together, live together, and it's simply a platonic relationship. Problem is, what happens when either the parties split up or often when one of them dies? In other words, if someone has a 50-50 ownership, if the case I just talked to you about, if these people or if this mother had purchased a home with someone else, what happens when they die? Now, if they've decided what's going to happen in their will, okay. But often if people are living together and one of them decides they don't want to live together any longer, they want to get rid of the house, if they have a will, they're going to change it. So it's very important for people to, when they're going to buy a house together, when they're going to, well, certainly when people buy a business together, and that, of course, is a buy-sell agreement. And people most often think about a buy-sell agreement when they're going to go into business with someone else. Not always, but they should. But a house, for example, or even a lease, because what happens if two people lease an apartment together, lease a condo, and, of course, they're expecting that both of them are going to contribute, and they can't afford it if they both don't contribute to the rent. Well, one moves out. If they're both on the lease, that's a problem. And frankly, even if only one of them is going to be on the lease, they need to, in writing, have an agreement. What happens if the other person moves out? Let's say, 27-year-old woman has a condo, doesn't have a condo, or has a condo, has a small condo, and then decides to live with someone else, and they get a bigger condo, but she can't afford the bigger condo without the help of the other person. If they're both on the lease, yes, they are both obligated to pay, but what else? I mean, what other thing can be more protection is, of course, an agreement where they agree as to what will happen if one of them decides to move out. The other thing, and I've mentioned this before, and I've had some interesting discussions with friends about the dog or the pet. And by the way, one of the attorneys that I'm thinking of that I've had these discussions with is Jay Thatcher. And happy 70th, Jay. It's your birthday today. And I hope you're enjoying it. But we often go back and forth and talk about some of these, people that come in to see us, and we commiserate with one another saying, gee, if they'd only come in much earlier, we would have been able to reach consensus on how they wanted to handle things, and frankly, it would be a lot less expensive than ending up in litigation how many thousands of dollars people have spent over dogs when they can't agree as to who should get the dog. So, in any event, I'll be back in just a moment to talk about what's some of the cases that have been going on and decided this week.
I'm Andy Ross. I'm chairman of the Ambassadors Committee of the Chamber. As members of the Ambassadors Committee, we contact new and renewing members of the Chamber to get their feedback on their Chamber experience and make them feel more at home with the Chamber.
Hunterdon Chamber of Commerce, building business, one business at a time.
Sabía que de cada cinco personas hay una que lucha con síntomas difíciles de salud mental. NAMI es una organización estatal sin fines de lucro. Somos empleados voluntarios. Somos la voz de la nación sobre las enfermedades mentales. NAMI te ofrece grupos de apoyo, educación e información. Nuestro programa educativo de familia a familia está dirigido por miembros de NAMI para familiares y amigos de personas que luchan con dificultad de salud mental. Llámanos al 888-803-3413. Recuerda, no estás solo. NAMI está contigo y no hay salud sin salud mental.
That's the spot in Spanish from NAMI Hunter. Excuse me, NAMI Hunterdon, very important organization in our community. If you have any family members experiencing mental health problems, they obviously also speak English. They really have a number of good programs, a lot of support. We're very lucky in Hunterdon County to have a number of volunteer organizations, and I hope we all support all of them. Recently, I'm on the board of Volunteer Guardianship One-on-One. We had a gala, and it wasn't a roast. It was a celebration. Our gala honoree was DJ Wright, who is one of the real volunteers in this community. I mean, DJ seems to be everywhere and doing everything. If you don't know him, you have to meet him. We always kid because DJ is a mortician, and of course I do family law, divorce law, and of course some of the people who see DJ actually want to see him because they may be in line for an inheritance. And by the time we see him individually, we're not going to know it. So in any event, we have some good banter back and forth, but if you've never met DJ, although he has, I think he's very humorous, he also is very serious and does so much to help families through such difficult times. He's also, as I said, so involved in the community. But Volunteer Guardianship One-on-One is a volunteer program here in Hunterdon who have volunteer guardians to help people who are elderly, who don't have anyone to come in and, help them. I don't mean help them in their house. I mean just help them with everything, medical appointments, finances, get other people involved. Many of the wards, and they're called wards, many of them are in facilities, some of the good facilities. Many of them, they need guardians because they are unable to handle their own affairs. The judge here is very good at appointing volunteer guardianship 101 as the guardians for people in all of those cases where there's not someone in the family who could handle it. Because under our law, under the statute here, if there is a family member who should be appointed, they're looked to first. Unfortunately, there's also an Office of the Public Guardian, but we are so lucky in Hunterdon County that we have volunteer guardianship and volunteers who can handle the guardian, the role as permanent guardian, rather than having a state agency do it. And I'm not complaining about the state agency, but it's so much better for the ward to have a volunteer guardian, and frankly, so much better for the taxpayers. So let's get back to see what else is happening today or this week in legal news. So there's been, in trials across the country, juries have answered the scientific question, did Johnson & Johnson's baby powder cause women to get ovarian cancer? And some of those cases, they do a review of all of the information to support or not support that. So that there was this case that I was talking about, the Santander Bank versus the estate of, and I'm not even going to try to pronounce the name, but Santander Bank was a plaintiff, and the defendants actually were, I misspoke when I said that one of the executors was a defendant. Actually, there were two brothers that were both defendants. The wife of one of the brothers was a defendant. The daughter was a defendant and her husband. And then, of course, the state of New Jersey and others were also the defendants. So I misspoke when I indicated that one of the brothers was filing this against another brother. But as I said, this was a foreclosure action, and the defendant appealed the final judgment of foreclosure and the order rejecting his challenge to the amount due. And as I said, the defendants were heirs of one of the executors of the deceased mother's estate. So, I mean, it just got very complicated because when these cases come up, you know, everybody in the world is sued. So the bank issued a notice of default, filed a foreclosure action, and moved for final judgment. The defendant disputed the amount due. Defendant asserted that he lived in the subject premises and that he was charged late fees after his mother's death that were in excess of those permitted by the Homeownership Security Act, HELOC. And so the Chancery Division judge denied the motion, finding he failed to comply with a certain rule of court and made no specific challenge to the calculations or provided alternate calculations. And he, the defendant, argued an offset should have been applied because the plaintiff's calculations of late fees violated a statute, which he contended limited the amount of to 5%. And so what happened is the appellate court found the defendant's arguments lacked sufficient merit to warrant a discussion and stated that he could not appear on behalf of his mother's estate without counsel and that because he held no interest in the property, was not a borrower under the note, and was not a mortgagor under the mortgage. So that was the problem with the defendant in this case and why, the bank won and did not have to show any proof that they were not in violation. All the appellate division did in this case is said that because, as I said, he held no interest in the property directly and was not a borrower or a mortgager, and that was what is defined in the statute, because he's not a borrower and was not and did not have any obligation to repay the loan, therefore he had no right to assert the claims. So that was, that was very, so even though he would get much less money as an heir, he's still not entitled to any relief according to the appellate division. So this was not, as I said, a published case, so a different appellate court could come up with a different view. So that's that is why often, it doesn't happen often, but when it does, that's a reason why the a case can go up to the Supreme Court to make a decision. So there were a number of other cases, but not a lot published this week. Former U.S. District Judge in Camden for more than 25 years died. Jerome Somaldi, did not know him. I'm finding, unfortunately, going to more and more funerals and wakes. Some of the most excellent, really excellent judges that I appeared before for years. Two of them died recently, Judge Glickman and Judge Seltzer. Judge Glickman sat in Essex County. Judge Seltzer sat in Passaic County. Both excellent judges. And I think, although I'm not sure, I think they sat in the family part for their entire careers. Judge Glickman may have actually been sitting in juvenile and domestic relations before the family part was created, which was pretty amazing. So one of the questions that are coming up is, can a property owner who says the government took her property without paying for it and therefore violated the Fifth Amendment taking clause sue the government in federal court? That seemingly straightforward question has spawned decades of litigation and commentary. So, you know, not what someone would think of would be simple, not so. There was a Supreme Court case opinion this week, and I think I've read not the entire opinion, but most of it, and very, very interesting from the standpoint of the fact that our Supreme Court would usually not take up this type of a case that started out as, let me talk about it a little bit. So in this case, the state appealed from the appellate division's vacation. They vacated the defendant's convictions for assault. So the defendant was suspected of the alleged offenses and brought to police headquarters. And in we don't know who the defendant is because they used initials LH. And it was a 65-page opinion by the New Jersey Supreme Court. And not unusual, very often their opinions are very lengthy. So although the defendant was, as I said, he was brought into police headquarters for questioning, although the defendant initially deflected the detective's accusations of criminal wrongdoing, the detectives began to suggest that if the defendant cooperated and incriminated himself, he would not go to jail. He would receive counseling and other help and would be free to raise his child. So defendant, as a result of that, ultimately began to make admissions, and each time he began to express hesitancy, the detectives would reiterate that defendant would receive help and counseling. So pre-trial, the defendant moved to suppress his statements. He also moved to suppress the victim's identification for the police failure to record the identification procedure. So specifically, defendant alleged that the victim was unable to identify her assailant in 14 prior identifications and only identified the defendant after he was arrested and his photo placed in the lineup next to the word suspect. So in other words, they signaled out, put his photograph in the lineup and put the word suspect next to it. Then, on apparently the 15th try, the victim identified him. So the trial court, most of us would feel, wait a minute, that's such overreaching. First of all, we know that eyewitness testimony can be, it's usually not considered that reliable, and the reason for that is especially if it's the perpetrator, alleged perpetrator, is of a different race. I think one of my all-time favorite movies from that standpoint was, I think it was, wasn't it My Cousin Vinny, where the older lady identified these two young boys as having robbed and shot someone coming out of in a convenience store. And, you know, that... if you haven't seen the movie, actually, I think that's, a great movie. Maybe it's only a great movie if you're an attorney. But there were some very clever aspects of that, including, what's her name, something Torme, when she was the mechanical expert that he asked and questioned on the stand. But the older lady who was trying to identify, or who did identify, said these two young men were the perpetrators. That was a great scene also. But in any event, in this case, after the trial court denied the defendant's motions, he pled guilty to his charges without prejudice to his appeal. And that is interesting. So what he said is, I will plead guilty, but it's without prejudice to my right to appeal. So what happened is the appellate division reversed the denial of defendant's motions and vacated his conviction. And then on appeal to the Supreme Court, they affirmed. So what happened is it was the state who filed the appeal from the appellate division when they vacated the conviction. So the on appeal, the Supreme Court affirmed. The court ruled first that the state had failed to prove beyond a reasonable doubt that defendant's statement was voluntary. And then the court noted that detectives made representations directly conflicting Miranda warnings, made promises of leniency, and made statements minimizing the seriousness of the offenses under investigation. The Supreme Court further ruled that the failure of the police to record the identification procedure required a hearing to determine the reliability of the victim's investigation of defendant, in both in the concurring and dissenting opinions. Now, Justice Patterson agreed that a hearing was necessary to determine the reliability of the defendant's identification, but argued that the court failed to defer to the trial court's finding that the defendant's confession was voluntary. So she disagreed on one area, but said that the court failed to defer to the trial court findings, because in cases, the appellate courts do defer to trial court findings. And in this case, she said they didn't and they should have. There's lots of stuff going on, of course, with the Homeland Security. There was a motion by plaintiffs in a case in the United States District Court for the District of Maryland to support motion for permission to proceed under pseudonym and to omit the plaintiffs' addresses from the captioned report. Excuse me, the caption complaint. So, and in this case, the plaintiffs came to the United States to escape violence, abuse, and persecution in their home countries. They arrived in the United States as children without a parent or guardian to care for them. And they were determined each to be by the government to be an unaccompanied alien child, which is a UAC. So all of the plaintiffs have applied for asylum with the U.S. Citizenship and Immigration Services, USCIS, USCIS, as they were entitled to do so under the Trafficking in Victims Protection Reauthorization Act. And so what happened, required notice and comment procedure, but what happened is a couple weeks before this, and it was filed in July, USCIS changed the rules, and they did so without following the required notice and comment procedure for rulemaking. So what they did is they mandated, as of June 30th, asylum officers should redetermine whether a child is a UAC, even if that child had been previously, even if the child previously was determined by the government to be an unaccompanied alien child. So under the new rules, the plaintiffs said they would likely be deprived of their right to seek asylum and may lose their ability to seek asylum entirely. So there are two processes that with asylum, and people would prefer going before the, instead of going to the court, they prefer to go through the other alternative, and so that, however, they need to be determined to be an unaccompanied, I often say unaccompanied minor, but it's really unaccompanied alien child. So they, in this case, the plaintiffs wanted the court to immediately intervene so they may exercise their right to seek asylum before USCIS and maintain the permanent protections afforded to unaccompanied alien children. So they're particularly vulnerable, of course, as they are suspended between that precarious residency in the United States and fear of retribution in the countries from which they seek asylum. So they seek through this action to challenge the validity of this new asylum eligibility. And as victims of violence and abuse in their countries of origin, pursuing this legal challenge to an illegal government policy threatens to unnecessarily expose facts about their private histories to the greater public. And so they fear, of course, the possibility of violence, both from Americans who might hold extreme anti-immigrant views and from individuals in their countries of origin to which they may be returned if their asylum applications are denied. So here we have, when people talk about between the rock and the hard place, this is certainly one of those situations. And so the all they were asking for is the court to allow them to proceed using pseudonyms anonymously and to admit their addresses from the complaint caption. So this situation can come up. In fact, I had it come up in a case here in Hunterdon County where my client had fled the state because of violence. And it's still, she wanted to protect her address and allow me to accept any service, etc. The judge denied it. So the trial judge denied it. And, of course, if this case ever has to go up on appeal, that will be one of the issues because it's the general presumption of openness of judicial proceedings operates only as a presumption and not as an absolute, unreviewable license to deny. And those are many cases under federal cases that allow parties to presume or proceed without using their name, where privacy or confidentiality concerns are sufficiently credible. And so the courts may exercise their discretion. And, of course, compelling someone to provide their address, especially when they will be involved in the court proceedings and no one needs to actually obtain their address, is also a real concern, especially a concern when there is domestic violence. Of course, the case I had, the woman fled without filing a complaint for domestic violence because she was too afraid to stay here under the circumstances. So it was truly a catch-22 because they would have protected her address if, in fact, she had filed a domestic violence complaint and there was a final restraining order. So in any event, those are, never know what's going to happen, but certainly the cases where people end up, as did the person in the case that went on appeal and only filed, not only filed an appeal, but obviously the case went all the way up to the New Jersey Supreme Court. Well, guess what? It's time to wrap up, and we'll be back after the wetter. It's not going to be wetter after the weather, and let's hear from the news, and we'll be back after that with the sports guys.
USA Radio News with Tim Berg.
Undeterred by a new Fox News poll that shows 48% of voters want Democrats to spend less time investigating President Trump, Chairman of the House Judiciary Committee, Democrat from New York, Jerry Nadler, says full steam ahead.
We will continue to seek testimony from key fact witnesses. As many of you know, the committee has authorized several additional subpoenas. Our work will continue into the August recess, and we will use those subpoenas if we must. Finally, today, we are filing an application for the grand jury material underlying the Mueller report.
A merger between T-Mobile and Sprint is being approved by the Justice Department. The $26 billion deal will combine T-Mobile, which is America's third largest wireless carrier, with Sprint, the fourth largest. T-Mobile and Sprint agreed to spin off billions of dollars in key assets to get the deal done. This is USA Radio News.
It is a horrible scenario, but it happens. Dennis writes about his wife. She was diagnosed with leukemia. In fact, she's a two-time survivor, and in the midst of all that, they ran up over $1 million in medical bills. Thankfully, they're Medishare members, and Dennis says they are so thankful for that, how others came together to meet their needs, and that's how so many Medishare members feel. This is not health insurance. It's different. You don't have to pay for things you don't believe in, and like Dennis found out, it just works. So if you join Medishare, not only do you save a lot of money, the typical family saves about $500 a month, but you know where your money's going each month. You're helping people, and if the time should come, they'll be helping and even praying for you. So yes, it's different, and as more than 400,000 people now know, when it comes to healthcare costs, different is beautiful. Find out more. Call 833-34-BIBLE. That's 833-34-BIBLE. 833-34-BIBLE.
USA Radio Network's Chris Barnes from Washington has a look at the latest economic news out today.
The nation's economic growth rate slowing a bit in the year's second quarter, but not by as much as analysts had forecast we'd see in this latest report from the Commerce Department. It says GDP growth from April through June was 2.1%, down from 3.1% in the first quarter. Analysts were expecting to see a growth rate of just 1.8%, which would have been the slowest in over 2 years.
Acting ICE Director Matt Albans tells Fox News that Congress is responsible for the inhumane conditions at many border detention facilities.
We've been asking Congress for years to fund our detention at the levels that we need, and they have failed to do so. If they had funded us at the 52,000 beds that we had requested in FY19, you would not see those conditions in the Border Patrol facilities right now.
Elbins also says they will continue to do the best they can at the border. And you're listening to USA Radio News.
Hi, I'm Wayne Allyn Root, the conservative warrior. My show, War Now, airs every day right here on USA Radio from 6 to 9 p.m. Eastern. I'm also the star of the Wayne Allyn Root Show on Newsmax TV, reaching over 50 million homes. But my favorite role is speaker extraordinaire. I was opening speaker at many Donald Trump for President events. I speak at Republican, conservative, and college GOP events, and I'm available to be the star at your next event. Contact me to arrange for a Wayne Root keynote speech. Call toll-free 888-444-ROOT. That's 888-444-ROOT. Or email wayneroot@gmail.com.
A new study came out from the Anti-Defamation League that says 65% of people have experienced severe harassment when playing video games online. Now, to be fair, 88% of people surveyed in that same study also say they've experienced some positive interaction while they played video games online. I had a chance to catch up with Julie Miner. She's an adjunct professor of global and community health at George Mason University, and one of the things we talk about is how video games have changed throughout the years.
Probably the best way to look at it is this perception we have of gamers as being sort of socially isolated basement dwellers, right? That they just get on the box and they just play and they're interacting with the game. It's not necessarily true. Most of the popular games, the most highly sold games in the U.S. in the past 4 or 5 years are all multiplayer. So in addition to the technological changes around them in terms of development and immersiveness and artwork and programming, the social nature of play is one of the things that really draws people to them and draws our kids to them. So even if they're playing video games in their house, they're interacting with their friends. They're collaborating with their friends on the game. And that's, I think, something that most parents don't realize is that social nature of play is a really important and integral part of why our kids now are so drawn to them.
For USA Radio News, I'm Tim Berg.
What do you want to do when you grow up? When we were young, it's a question we were often asked. As we get older, our passions become clearer, our pursuits become careers, and if we're diligent, we begin to plan for the life we want to live. That's why, at Ameriprise Financial, we ask what's most important to you. Starting with our confident retirement approach, your Ameriprise financial advisor will ask questions that help you arrive at a customized plan that allows you to realize your goals today, tomorrow, and throughout retirement. With the right financial advisor, life can be brilliant. Call Michelle Heide and Associates, a private wealth advisory practice of Ameriprise Financial Services Incorporated, today at 908-713-6600. Office is located at 16 Lee Street, Units 1B and 1C in Clinton, New Jersey. The confident retirement approach is not a guarantee of future financial results. Investment advisory products and services are made available through Ameriprise Financial Services Incorporated, a registered investment advisor.
Well, we're here. We have the sports guys, and I think Bill is going to be on. Bill, why don't you try your headphones and see if, in fact, the headphones, you can hear yourself talking. But before that, let me tell you that Bill has the perfect weekend if he goes to the boat, because beautiful day out there. I think, Bill, it was more than 88 degrees, but you know, I just thought it might have hit 90, but we know that it's been sunny, at least 88 degrees today. Tonight, only going down to about 64, which should be good sleeping weather.
I think so.
By tomorrow, we're expecting a beautiful sunny day, high of about 87 degrees, and by Sunday, it will be sunny. I always have a difficulty saying Sunday sunny. But 89 degrees we're expecting. Mostly clear Saturday night, partly clear on Sunday night. Monday, sunny, and then there is a slight chance of thunderstorms. High of about 92 degrees, so we can always expect thunderstorms when it gets into the 90s and kind of cools it off a little bit. By But not supposed to be that cool Monday night, only about 70 degrees. So we're here. Sports guys can't believe that not that much longer before preseason starts, meaning football.
Well, that's great, Pat. You know, I always love this time of year because it's like what I call the interseason. You've got baseball starting to get really hot and heavy, and you have training camps opening yesterday. But, you know, I want to talk a little bit about something I'm going to be doing. So I'll be missing next week's show. I'm going to the Pittsburgh Steelers training camp, not in Latrobe, Pennsylvania,